This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London Weekend Review podcast. And my name's Billy Grant and I'm sitting here after our game against Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park. And I'm sitting here with my chums, Laney Lane and the Allard. Laney Lane, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you, mate. Yep, got back from South London in one piece. So, with a point under my arm. So, yeah, very happy.
And we've got the Allard in the house as well. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all good. Yeah, it was a good day out yesterday. And no hangover this morning, which is always a winner.
That's always definitely a winner. So listen, we're going to review yesterday's match, you know, in bits and pieces as we do starts. But first of all, like I said to you, check out the post-match podcast. We do a podcast straight after the game, as you know, on the terraces, in the streets, wherever we do. We've got Rasmus Ankerson on there. We've even got Matthew Benham on there and his son chatting about it, giving their thoughts on the game. But also, we're going to look forward to the Forest Green Rovers game. We're playing them in the League Cup on Tuesday, and we're going to be chatting to Laurie Martin from the FGR podcast. We'll chat to him after our little chat about the Palace game. But first of all, like I said to you, let's just go back to this Palace game. I mean, guys, Laney, give us your main takeaway from that match.
Main takeaway was the fact that we're competing again, and we're unbeaten and not conceding. Defence is really tight. Pontus seems to have stepped up to the mark. We're well organised at the back. We have a real good springboard for the rest of the season, assuming we don't go off the rails. So yeah, my main takeaway is that, you know, I'm just really confident with what I'm seeing, and I'm just relieved that it seems to be going to plan so far.
Seems to be going to plan. I mean, the Allard, what's your thoughts on just on the match?
Yeah, I mean, my main takeaway was it was the intensity of it. I really didn't think that we had a moment to breathe. I don't remember us playing in such an intense match in recent times, and certainly not of that sort of quality, if that makes sense. I think we talk about the Championship being really physical, but I think what we saw yesterday was how intense and physical, also laced with a good amount of skill, the Premier League can be when you're playing teams like Crystal Palace. And when I say teams like, I don't mean that disrespectfully. I just think you realise how hard this season is going to be. It was intense.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that, you're talking about that, in effect, we couldn't switch off, because I think the thing about it is that sometimes in the Championship, in the games, and the reason why we've lost it is you see us switch off for a minute and we lose it. But in that game, I mean, you couldn't switch off at all, because even though it's very even Stevens, you've got the midfields quite well matched and we're battling away, but you switched off for a minute, you're in trouble. And we switched off early on in the game when Conor Gallagher came down, smacked it against the post, and it was just like, whoa, you know, those little moments can actually really cost you, innit?
Yeah, and I think that's what I mean is we've had to step up our intensity. Palace didn't give us a moment to play yesterday, really. You know, there was no passage of play where we kept the ball for even maybe a minute or something like that. It was proper intense, and I think it was a real eye opener for me. I didn't relax. in the game, and our players couldn't afford to relax.
The physicality of it as well. I mean, some of the challenges were going in from both sets of players really were big, you know, and the timing had to be spot on. And I also noticed that Frank Onyeka, he spends quite a lot of time on the floor, doesn't he?
yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure whether he's targeted or whether he just, you know, likes to spend a bit of time on the floor. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's interesting because the Palace fans have talked about it. They talked about it on the post-match podcast as well, saying that they felt that we time wasted a lot, especially from set pieces, and we sort of went down and didn't get back up again, which, you know, there's an argument to say maybe that's fair, but also the other thing is that when they clattered Jan Elt, they really did clatter him, and he's not a person, when he goes down, he gets straight back up again. So we did actually think he was hurt at the time, didn't we?
Absolutely, yeah.
And that suggests we were playing for a draw. I didn't feel like we played for a draw. I thought we went out there and set our stall out that we were going to try and win that game. It didn't come off, obviously. But to suggest we were time wasted, maybe the last 10 or 15 minutes when things swung a little bit, probably Palace's way, you could make an argument. But for the rest of the game, I think genuinely people were getting hit quite hard. Although Frank, yeah, he does spend quite a bit of time on the floor.
Yeah. And if you check the post-match podcast out as well, we talked to Rasmus Ankersen again, the Brentford director of football, who actually said that he thought we were a little bit unlucky, and if we had the rub of the green a bit, we might have got the 3 points. For me, my main takeaway is that I thought defensively we were much better than I thought it would be. And this is no disrespect to the players that we've got, but I just thought in the Premier League, you know, and I know we've only played 2 matches, but I think defensively, I think we're really tight. And that's the main thing we need to have. If you're not letting in goals or you're being very tight in defence, that's going to set you up a long way. So that's made me actually very happy as well. Also, there's one main takeaway I had for that is that actually I forgot how much walking you do on away days. You know, obviously we haven't been to away days for like 18 months, and you can tell when you get up in the morning, when you've had a good old away day, when your legs are hurting, your muscles are hurting in your legs, because, you know, you've actually walked for about 3 or 4 miles that day. And I did quite a lot of walking, you know, South Norwood, North Norwood, East Norwood, you know, Clapham, you know, East Dulwich. I was walking all over the place yesterday. So I definitely knew that I had a big away day as well. And 23,000. We come to that a little bit later as well, but I thought, you know, big crowds, you know, not used to that. But look, coming back to the game as well, the Brentford eye catcher, the Allard, who caught your eye for the bees?
Yes, and that's an interesting one. Actually, do you know what? I think for me, I've got Brian and Bumo down. I just couldn't believe how much work he put in. He's turned this sort of corner this season for me, where he's just putting in so much. Maybe it's because the position he's playing in is slightly different, because obviously he's playing up alongside Tony, and he just worked and worked and worked, and he harassed and harassed and harassed, and occasionally he turned the ball over. And yeah, I just thought he was exceptional yesterday. He probably just ran out of puff a little bit in the last 15-20 minutes, and that's why, you know, I'll give him a 8.5 out of 10. I think when Tony put a cross in just towards the end, maybe the last 20 minutes, and Bruno wasn't there, and Tony was really frustrated with him, and he was, and soon after he was substituted. But other than that, I just thought he was exceptional.
Laney?
I'm going to give it to David Raya, I think. I think that tip over save was just kind of just exceptional, and he looked in control at the back and confident all the way through the game. You know, we passed it out well. We did that kind of play out from the back, and we played those beautiful triangles. He looks on top of his game, you know, apart from the one chance that hit the bar on the post, the Palace early on, I thought he marshalled the defence really well. David Raya, I think he had a cracking game yesterday.
Yeah, that save that he pulled off, actually, I think that's a prime example of situations where you could find yourself all of a sudden in a bit of a pickle. Again, you talked about it last week about going 1-0 down, Laney, and when you go 1-0 down, how are we going to get back for that? And there's a situation where, you know, I didn't think Palace, again, if you look at the stats and that, but also looking at the game itself, they didn't create actually that many open chances. Obviously, they hit the post with Gallagher. And other than that, they actually didn't create many chances. I mean, if you like the XG, their XG was about 0.5, I think it was. and ours was 0.0. Ours was almost one, you know. So again, you know, if you're looking at the chances that created, we created, you know, twice as many good quality chances as they did in a game which didn't have that many chances as such. But you know, that opportunity that they had when all of a sudden they just went, you could see it in the second half. It looked like, whoa, this is a bit of a danger moment. Bang. And he pulled that save off. I thought, you know, that was definitely a big moment for me. And I keep going on about it, but I love Frank the Tank Onyeka. I just thought that his energy and his kind of, you know, his energy in the middle of that pitch, breaking up the play, the tackles, his pressing game, I just thought that it kind of like it caught them, not say it caught them unaware, but they just couldn't handle it. And I just thought that he was tremendous. I mean, obviously he couldn't keep it up for the full 90 minutes, but when he was doing it, you know, we were winning the ball back quite a lot in midfield, and we were just, you know, pressing them. And also, like, you know, the Crystal Palace players trying to play it out from defence as well. You know, they were struggling to play the ball out from defence, trying to get it out there and playing the ball back to their keeper the whole time. And I just thought, you know, what was going on with us there, that was really great. And Frank the Tank Onyeka, I loved what he was doing, and I'd love to see him. I can't wait in sort of 4 or 5 weeks' time when he actually gets up to full fitness to see what he's like. But talking about Palace, and we talked about, you know, a couple of chances that they had there. The Palace danger person, who was that for you, Laney?
Benteke.
Hold on a second. Sorry about that. I'm going to say, just coming back to the Brentford eye catcher. Yeah, marks out of 10, the Allod.
I gave mine. It was 8.5 from Bruma.
Okay. Laney?
9 out of 10 for David Raya.
And Frank the Tank, 8 out of 10 for me. And the Palace Danish danger person, you're saying Benteke, Laney?
Yeah, he's. I mean, he didn't really get a huge amount of service. He had one header in the second half, which he should have done a lot better with. But it's that standard of forward that we're going to come up against. That if we get them on their day, you know, they're going to punish us. And, you know, fortunately, it didn't work out for him. But I was, whenever he was around the ball or on the ball or when a cross was about to go in, I was wary. He was the one I was looking out for. More the one I was looking out for rather than the one that actually caused us much pain. But, you know, I think Benteke is a good striker at this level.
Okay, and I've got to come around to myself next, actually, because I'm always going last, and I think that I'm actually going to choose Gallagher. I thought Gallagher, who obviously we know from the Championship last season, or was it the season before, actually, when he played for Charlton, you know, and he had a great half season for them, and then I think somebody else nabbed him and he went somewhere else in the Championship after that. I can't remember exactly where he went to, but anyway, but he had a great season, and I thought that he stepped up quite well for them, and he was obviously he had a great chance early on in the game, but he was causing us a few problems. He was in midfield. He was pressing himself quite hard. He was actually getting himself into the area, getting himself into the danger areas as well. And I thought he actually had a really good game. And according to my Palace chums, and they say that it's interesting, under Hodgson, he wouldn't be allowed to do that, they said. Hodgson wouldn't want any of his midfielders to actually be sort of getting into the opposition area or anything like that. It's just not allowed. So I thought he caused us a few problems. The Allod.
I suppose in the spirit of this, I have to pick somebody else, but
not at all.
Well, then I agree with you on Conor Gallagher. I just thought he probed. I thought we found him quite hard to pick up in the first half. I think we did a better job in the second half. He had that good chance, didn't he? I think he made it look like one of the best chances of the match because he smashed it against the woodwork. Probably it wasn't so much because it was a really tight angle, but. He's a good player. Maybe his discipline let him down a couple of times, but yeah, he impressed me. I'll give him a 7.5.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you're talking XG, that chance was like pretty much most of their 0.5 XG, to be quite honest with you. I'll have to check it out, but it's quite high. Probably about one in three of those get, you know, actually hit the back of the net. So I mean, I thought MacArthur as well was half decent as well in midfield for Palace. But in general, I thought we did a good job of kind of containing them as well. You know, I mean, I'm just wondering, Laney, have you got a defining moment from that match?
Yeah, where was the Raya save for me? That was the one. I think that's as you mentioned, that was the thing that kept us in it. You know, I'm not sure if either team would have come back from conceding a goal. I think it was, you know, it was 0-0, quite written all over it quite early on, I thought. And, you know, if either team scored, I think they would have definitely won. And I think, you know, Raya, that was destined for the top corner, I think. So, yeah, we got to thank him for the point, I think.
Yeah, just coming back to, you know, your danger person, Laney. I mean, I know you said Benteke out of 10.
Well, he did. I mean, you know, I explained, I mean, it was probably more of the threat in my head than the actual threat on the pitch. You know, he probably only had a 6 out of 10, but yeah. So, but you know, Palace have got good pros all over the pitch. I don't think they're a very strong team. You know, I don't think they're going to score many goals this season.
The Allard, Gallagher.
Gallagher, I think 7.5. I just think I think sometimes his discipline let him down a bit. But yeah, he could easily have been an 8.5, 9. He faded maybe a bit in the game.
Yeah, he did. Again, and I gave him an 8 out of 10 as well, because I thought he did all right. Okay, listen, I mean, we talked about the defining moment there. Allard, have you got any defining moments at all?
I suppose maybe, and I can't really say it, but I think you could say when Norgaard put in the tackle that he got booked for, because suddenly we put in a crunching tackle and it felt like, you know, we were there to compete. I thought the yellow card count could have gone a bit more. I'm thinking they ended up with 3 yellow cards, didn't they, Palace? But certainly at the point where Norgaard got booked, I think they'd only had 1 booking, and I remember thinking, you know, really, they should have had a few more.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. If you say that was your defining moment, I'd actually say there was a defining moment for us where it could have gone horribly wrong. It's when Norgaard made the tackle in the second half, which was a foul, and they got a free kick on the edge of the area, and which is basically one of the things that we let ourselves down on, probably the only thing that we let ourselves down on, and sort of giving them too many free kicks. But that was a kind of potential. It could have been a red card, because he'd already had a yellow card on that one. But he put his hand up, and, you know, somebody says because he was polite to the ref when he got his initial yellow card, maybe the ref actually let him off on that one. But that was definitely a moment where it was kind of like we had that game, we were kind of controlling the game to a certain extent, and Norgaard being sent off could have actually, it could have actually changed everything and turned it on its head. So
And there was another moment, I think, where he got caught, and I can't remember who it was, and he sort of fell into the plate, and you could literally see it going through his head. I can't bring this bloke down. I need to get out of this without getting a yellow card. And it was just a sort of scramble where he was trying basically not to get a yellow card and give away a foul.
I think that was the moment I talked about, because we gave away a foul in the free kick. Yeah, in the end. Because he fluffed it.
Because
I think he got the ball and he was in possession, and then they kind of won the ball back and he tried to win it back and he sort of kind of fouled him and fell over and just, like, you know, and it's like, I don't know.
It was a really silly kind of free kick routine. I think he played it short and he turned into trouble and there was a player on him, and you're right.
I think you said it was at the other end of the pitch, but that was nearer us, wasn't it? But yeah, that's exactly the point. And you could see him going, I can't get a yellow card here, but I need to stop them. And it was it was sort of amusing, really. It also seemed to go on for about 5 seconds.
That's right. So listen, I mean, we've talked about, you know, danger persons, defining moments. Tell me what was your, and it could be anything now, tell me what your stinker of the match was, and or the stinker of the day, and give us some marks out of 10 for that.
Well, I'm gonna go Wilfried Zaha. I thought he was an absolute he was just horrible to watch. He didn't look like he was enjoying himself. He was moaning and whinging and what a sourpuss. Didn't even shake hands at the end of the game. He didn't look like he wanted to be playing for Palace. If he was a Brentford player, I'd want him gone as quickly as possible. I think he's not a team player. He's not there for Palace, is he?
No, I mean, Zaha, you know, was definitely one for me as well. And I thought it was quite nice that we actually contained him. He didn't have a shot on target as well, you know, for somebody who's so highly rated and he's meant to be your key player. You know, we could be pretty much, you know, had him in the pocket as it was. I mean, the Allard, stinker for you.
On the football side of thing, I'm going to go Zaha as well. But from the Palace angle, because when we were walking back to the train station, we sort of made some new chums, as we say, and got chatting to a couple of, you know, good guys that are Palace fans, and they said more or less what Laney's just said, is that they just want to ship him out, take the money, and build a team, essentially, because they just basically said he's playing for himself. He doesn't appear to be playing for the team, and they were thoroughly frustrated with him, probably as much as we were and as much as Sergi Canos was.
I mean, for me, I can go Zaha as well for exactly the same reasons as you, you know, and I'm not going to go into any much more, but because he wasn't great. And like I said to you, as a Palace fan, I'd be pretty gutted actually if Zaha actually played for me. Imagine if he was playing for us. I mean, there'll be all sorts of moaning going on, you know, in the new Ealing Road, we call it, in the West End, like, you know. But for me, there's a couple of interesting stinkers actually. I mean, I think that, and this was a real kind of a call for us, a real realisation, because we spent quite a lot of time sort of trying to plot up, you know, exactly what we were going to do yesterday, where we're going to go, how we're going to get to the game, what we're going to go to, where we're going to drink. And it was a bit of a nightmare because basically the plotting was doing, because Crystal Palace have got like a bouncers on the door, no home fans in this pub policy, which we're not used to at all. It doesn't happen at Brentford, doesn't happen at 95% of the away games that we go to when we've been going in the Championship in the lower leagues. And it's a real, you know, eye-opener for us coming to the Premier League and having this and trying to get into places. So the away fan policy for me, I think, is just, it's a right stinker for me, as you know, sort of drinking locally, the right stinker. We got away with it in the end, and we managed to find a place, which we'll talk about a little bit later when we talk about the away day. But for me, that was a stinker. But I have to also mention, you know, and I think that'll make people laugh, is the roll neck guy in the home end who kept on abusing the away fans, like, you know, something that we've missed for years, like, you know what I'm saying, the sort of the pointy fingers, the fingers up, and then he gets taken away by the stewards and the police, and then he pops back up again and he's just giving abuse. I thought that, you know, it was amusing and it reminds us of the away days, but he was a proper stinker. I mean, did you see it from where you were, the Allod?
Oh yeah. I mean, we were sort of down towards the front, so we saw him very clearly, and he disappeared with 10 minutes to go, never to return. It decided he was going to take on the whole of the Brentford end. But I just need to be somewhere for 5 o'clock.
Yeah, you use the word stinker. I use the word arsehole, and I really do hope he gets what's coming to him at some stage, because he obviously does that every game. That's the reason he stands there. So yes, hopefully some sort of justice will be meted out at some stage.
Yeah, but maybe he probably went into the Bermuda Triangle. You've heard about the Bermuda Triangle. It's talked about where people disappear behind the stands and they're never seen again, like, you know, just like the Bermuda Triangle. So I think that might have been what's happened to him. So listen, just Lainey, give us some positives for you from that game. I know we've talked about a lot of things, but just nail it for me, the positives.
Well, positives, yeah, defence, solidity, confidence, organisation. Building clearly a strong campaign ahead of us. It's a very, very positive time. 4 points out of six, and I'm also delighted the way the fixture list has meted out our fixtures rather than the ones that Norwich have got, because they're minus 10 goals on us now. Because they had Liverpool and then Man City. Obviously, our win against Arsenal has helped us hugely, but it shows you, you know, it could have been different, and how grateful we should be that, as I said, the fixture list has been fairly kind to us. So that's the positives for me. It's just the fact that we can sit there looking at the league table, not looking up at everyone else and hemorrhaging goals. We're sat there with things, a confident position to build on for ahead of Aston Villa next week.
But do you think it's fair? I mean, some of the Palace fans were saying, not the ones that we spoke to after the game. Again, if you check out the post-match podcast, we chatted to a few Palace fans after the game on that, so check that out. But no, if you look around on the forums, that they were sort of saying, how sad are Brentford for celebrating a nil-all draw? Like, you know, they're sort of kind of putting us down for sort of celebrating, you know, after the game, the players came over and the fans were really happy. Do you think that's a fair point, or do you think that's a bit kind of like, you know,
I think it's just this ridiculous thing to suggest. You know, we're first time we've been up here in our lifetimes, and you know, we've got a solid away point. We're celebrating and enjoying being here. It's you know, the euphoria of the playoff victory and the win over Bournemouth is continuing. You know, it's you know, if we walked away booing our team off, I'd be really concerned. No, applauding our team off after that result, I'd say is what an intelligent football supporter would do, rather than someone who's salty and full of sour grapes.
There's an argument to say that if that game was played and it was like the second last game of the season and we needed a point to help us to not get relegated, then you celebrate that then. So, I mean, what's the difference with celebrating it at the beginning of the season and at the end of the season?
But Bill, you know, also, it's the first time that all our fans have been together at an away game. You know, it's almost 3,000 Brentford there, and they've had a good day out. I mean, what do you want us to do? Just turn away and walk away like moping? No. I don't care what fans like that say. You know, it's irrelevant. I know, I'm only really worried about what Brentford fans think at the moment. I don't care what the Premier League thinks of us at this stage. It's still too early. You know, we're enjoying every minute of it, and long may that last.
Listen, the Ellard, positives.
I think you have to say 180 minutes played in the Premier League, and we haven't let a goal in. I mean, that's a brilliant statistic to start our Premier League experience off, isn't it? And that sort of backs up exactly what Laney said. And it also, you know, explains why, you know, you celebrate not letting a goal in, don't you? I mean, you are allowed to do that, I think. I think, you know, we're 4 points in. Well, by my reckoning, if we can average a point a game, we'll be safe this season. So we're now 4 points after two games. That's amazing.
That's right. And interesting, because we weren't sure when we did the podcast last week exactly how many points that we needed in the Premier League to stay up, because we all know what it's going to be in the Championship. You know, 50 points, 52 points, you know, maybe even you can get away with it, 48 points. We know that nailed on, but we don't know. But I was told yesterday by the Palace fans, 38 points, they say. If you're 40 points, you're nailed on. But 38 points, you should be safe in the Premier League. So we've got, what's it, 34 points to go.
We can't. Yeah. Equally, I'm going to go back at those Palace fans. Like, all that flag waving beforehand, isn't that a bit over the top for a game against Brentford? Was that their cup final? You know what I mean? It's just like you can pick stuff out, and you know, I just go back to my default position. I don't need anyone's permission to be happy. You know, and if they're not happy with us being happy, then it's up to them. I don't give a monkey's.
That's right, yeah. And for me, I mean, you've talked about it before, but for me, it's defence, and I keep saying it. You know, the fact that, you know, we're better defensively than I thought would be, with all due respect to our defenders, not saying that they're bad, but I'm just saying with Premier League, that for me has made me happy. Listen, it might change over the next few weeks, so that is one massive bonus for me. Oh, but also our pressing game, which it seems to have gone up a level as well. It's either this gone up to a level, or people just don't press in the same way that we've been pressing in this league, because, you know, I think it's helped with, like I said, Frank the Tank coming in and picking it up very quickly as well. But even people like Janolt, you know, I'm saying he's just a nutter, you know, and they're just brilliant, that side. So things like that, which goes to show you that, you know, we're able to, you know, we're able to match these teams and give them a few problems, which I think is a major positive. So, but, you know, obviously not everything's hunky-dory. You know, what do we need to look out for, the Ellard?
I just think we need to look out for, at the moment, for me, it feels like we've got our strongest 11 out there. Coming off the bench yesterday, we could get a couple of injuries, and I think it could start getting a little bit concerning. So we just probably need to have a good game Tuesday night, get a lot of the bench playing and stuff like that. It feels like we're playing at absolute maximum at the moment, and we can't relax at all. We've got no space to play is what I'm finding. We need to find a way to create a bit more space to play, and hopefully in games against the teams that are going to be around us, we need to hopefully just find a way to play a little bit more than we did yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, you noticed that again, Frank the Tank, when he came off, you know, and we got Godos on again. This is no disrespect to him, but you noticed, you know, how our game sort of changed slightly. You know, we also had Bidstrup that came on a little bit later as well. You know, so it's almost like the good thing, those players, I thought they did really well, because we didn't collapse, but it felt at the end that we were sort of slightly hanging on. I didn't feel that, you know, we might get an unlucky goal behind us, but I didn't think we were hanging on by a thread. But you could see the difference between the two sides, couldn't you?
Yeah, and there's an argument that says what we really need to do is bring somebody on just to change the game. And I don't think we had somebody on the bench that could do that. And maybe that's more my point. I thought Godos, you know, he played a lovely through ball, didn't he? And so he got himself into the game. Bidstrup obviously gets himself into the game quickly. He's a fantastic all-round player, but I think he gave the ball away stupidly, maybe with about 7 or 8 minutes to go. And Wiese was excellent on the ball, not so excellent off it. He certainly had none of the pressing intent that Brian had, and considering he was only on the pitch for 10 or 15 minutes. I thought that was a little bit disappointing, if I'm honest.
Yeah, yeah. Laney?
I agree. You know, we do need someone, you know, that can come on and impact the game. But you know, I just thought with the intensity of yesterday, I think we could smell a point towards the end, and I think we'd stopped pushing quite as hard for that win. I think Ivan Toney's struggling a little bit. He's not really kind of at where we need him to be. He had a couple of chances. One come off his shoulder instead of his head. That probably could have gone in. And there was another header that he came in and he needed to get over it. The ball was probably just a little bit too high. Another day he would have got at least one, maybe two goals there. So I think it's going to come good for Toney, but I just don't, as long as he doesn't keep trying too hard, I think, you know, he just needs to carry on doing what he's doing, being in those positions, chances will come.
Okay, and the same for me as well. Again, it's taking the chances. I've been saying it all the time. It's one of those things, you know, we had all right. You know, if you compare to the Championship, our XG is probably slightly lower because we knew we were going to get less chances here. But we still, you know, we're right. You know, twice as good, decent chances than Palace had, but we didn't put them away. And that Toney chance that you talked about was a big chance that we didn't, that he didn't nail. You know, and maybe he might have nailed that in the Championship. Maybe the defences that he's playing against are better. Like, you know, so we need to start looking at taking our chances. Maybe this will come with time. Don't forget, Ivan Toney took a bit of a time to actually get going last season as well. You know, there was the old what a waste of money, tongue-in-cheek chance in the pub at the beginning of the season when we bought him. And that carried on when he was scoring his 30 and 31 goals, like, you know. So we'll see how that goes. But listen, I mean, just talking about football fans, the thing that we have missed, I'd say massively, is the away day. And I just want you guys to just give us your marks out of 10 and just talk to me about your away day. The Allards.
I'd give it an 8. I think it could potentially easily be a 5. I think you've already touched on it a little bit. You have to plot up for this one. We did a sort of Peckham detour before the game. That worked out nicely, and then it was just, I think, 15, 20 minutes on the train. So we stopped at a nice little brewery in Peckham, did a few beers there, and then jumped on the train about 2-ish, and we got in the ground about, you know, 2:45, 2:50. You don't need to get in the ground any time before that, do you? So that worked nicely. And then after the game, a little bit of a meet up in Clapham at this funny little place called Project Orange, which is, like, I can best describe it as a heavy metal bar that has a decent selection of beer. But I think they were really happy to see us. They had no one in there until we all piled in. And they made us feel very welcome, at least to the point that I left. I don't know how it went on after that. Laney might be able to fill us in.
No, they carried on being quite happy that we were there. Yeah. No, it's good. For me, as an away day, it was 5, maybe even 4. It seems to be a lot of travelling, a lot of moving around, a lot of walking, a lot of trains. I didn't enjoy my day out at all, really, until I got back to Clapham later on and I could relax a bit. So, yeah, no, I'll go 4 out of 10 for me.
What about the atmosphere in the ground from you guys?
The atmosphere in the ground for me was a lot better. I'll give that an 8. I thought Brentford fans were excellent. I thought Palace were very, very good. Not massively into the flags, but the Holmesdale ultras, I thought, put on a good show. Probably not at their loudest, but, you know, they didn't score, but they did well to get behind the team. Yeah, overall, I thought that was an 8.5 out of 10.
And I factor that into my sort of overall 8, is that if you plan it, it can be an 8. The away end, I thought, worked pretty well. There was good noise from us. So it was a bit of a weird one. Maybe my 8 almost comes from the fact I haven't done an away game in a year and a half or however long it's been.
Yeah. For me, I mean, I've given it sort of a 7 out of 10. Again, it's a difficult one because, like I said, the plotting up was you know, it's a nightmare. Trying to sort of kind of just find somewhere where everybody can, you know, it's going to be meeting up and, you know, people come earlier, people come later. There's the fact that there's problem with tickets. So some people wanted to be able to access the ticket place earlier because they needed to go. So we ended up going local more than actually start to go away. And also going away, there was a bit of a problem because there was a few train delays as well. I mean, on the way back as well, I had nightmare train delays. So it's just things like that, which creates a problem, which makes it not great. But we ended up in a cafe right in the middle of kind of like right end of the manor, which was the guy was not particularly happy with us coming there because he was saying, oh no, you're going to take places from my palace locals. And we were like, I'm not being funny, mate. We're here at 12 o'clock when you've opened and we've filled the place full of Brentford fans. And he was like, very not happy with us and more Bees fans. We basically took the place over. But then his palace locals, they didn't turn up till about half one, quarter to two anyway. So I just thought that was quite strange. But, you know, it was good to see loads of characters that I've not seen in a long time. It was a good vibe. The beer was average in that place, but that didn't really matter to me. It was the fact that, you know, mates that I haven't seen for ages all got in together, had a good chin wag before the match, and then we went off to the game. The game itself, the atmosphere, I thought was good. I thought I've got a lot of respect for Palace, their fans, you know, the home style, the noise that they make. So I thought it was good inside the stadium. I thought the Bees fans were good as well. I said, you know, could be again. It's one of those ones where you made more noise. A goal would have helped, obviously, to take it up to another level, but I thought it was okay. And after the game, I went, eventually, winging my way back to Dulwich to go and meet a few of my Millwall mates, stroke Dulwich Hamlet buddies down there for a little bit of a post-match. So the away day itself, I'd give that a 7 out of 10. But that was boosted up, I think, a lot by the atmosphere in the ground as well. If it came down to the drinking itself, you know, I think that Palace needs to actually do a few more things to actually make away fans more welcome. And just make, you know, so that's the way it goes. But listen, I'm going to ask you guys to sum up the whole day, sum up the whole experience, sum up the whole game. Laney.
Yep. So just a solid point, really. Yeah, it was kind of like mission accomplished, I'd say. You know, I think if anyone said 4 points from the first two games, you would have bitten their hands off, and that's what we've achieved. That's the summing up, really. It's just that I thought the performance by Brentford was pretty good. There's still room for improvement. We needed a goal that would have made it even better. I think we come back to West London with our heads held high, and mission accomplished.
The Allard.
Yeah, we got in and we got out in one piece, and we could have sneaked it. Like you've already said, you know, if you look at the chances, I think we had better chances than Palace if you add it all together and you trust the old XG, and we tend to. That's not to say that, you know, one lapse in concentration and Palace could have won, but we got out in one piece. I think that's what's important. It was our first big battle, and
And for me, it's the fact that, you know, Palace, they are the survivors. They survive every year in that league, and they know how to survive, and we matched them, you know. So it's kind of one of those things where if we're going to be down that level, you know, and we're going to be sort of surviving, at least we know that we are matching the team that does similar, you know. As we said, you know, any other day we could have won that game. Rasmus Ankersen, Brentford director of football, said to, you know, if we had a bit of luck, we might have won that game, but we didn't, you know. So this is a good barometer for us as well. The other thing, you know, the summary for me is we're actually doing better than I thought so far, and this is not a disrespect to Brentford, but I said no barometer, had no idea how we're going to do in this Premier League. So I think we're doing better than we sort of thought so far. Still a very long way to go, so we'll see how that goes. And the other thing is that, like I said to you, we need to know how to convert our chances, because, you know, we've had a couple of, you know, relatively, we can say easy, but games, we're going to have some difficult games down the line, so we need to convert those chances to get ourselves up there. But overall, very happy with the way things are going. So listen, so just finished one game at the weekend against Palace, and we've got another game coming up on Tuesday against Forest Green Rovers in the League Cup. We've got Laurie Martin from the FGR podcast. He's going to give us the lowdown on Forest Green Rovers.
Hi Billy, Laurie Martin here from the Pod on Top of the Hill podcast, a Forest Green Rovers fan podcast. I also cover the club for Gloucestershire Live as well, and have supported them pretty much my entire life. And it's a big game for Forest Green on Tuesday night, away at your lot, Brentford. I'm sure our fans are slightly more excited than you are, but it's a big night out for Forest Green fans. Only the second time that we will have played a Premier League side in a competitive fixture. The other time was pretty much 2 years ago to the week, I think. Carabao Cup second round, played AFC Bournemouth. 0-0 draw in normal time. They had a good team out as well. Callum Wilson, Harry Wilson, some really good players. Forest Green held firm, eventually bowed out on penalties, 3-0, failed to score a penalty that night. So yeah, it's only the second time and a really exciting opportunity for those Rovers players to go out and strut their stuff in a brand new ground, which we can't wait to visit. And we come into it with plenty of confidence as well, you know, acknowledging that it's going to be extremely difficult. But Forest Green have had a brilliant start. 5 wins in a row in the last round in the Carabao Cup. It was a penalty shootout victory over Bristol City. But in the league, Rovers are looking absolutely scintillating, to be honest. The most informed team in the EFL. The only teams who have won their 4 opening matches. The highest scorers, 13 goals in 4 games. It took us 10 games to get to that tally last season. And all of this is because of a new head coach. Rob Edwards has come in during the summer and has done really good things so far. Mark Cooper departed end of last season after 5 years in charge. And in comes Rob Edwards. Not a lot was known about him, to be honest. He's got an impressive CV in terms of youth experience, working with England and working with the Wolves under 23s. But in terms of men's management, a brief spell at Telford in the National League North was all he had. So, you know, Forest Green fans, I think, sort of acknowledged that might have to have a bit of patience with this new gaffer. But he started like a house on fire. And yesterday's 6-3 win over Crawley Town sort of epitomised that. Some really slick attacking football. Beat Walsall comfortably last week as well, 3-1. They're just looking a very, very good side at the moment. In terms of Forest Green, I'm not sure how much Brentford fans will know about the club, but I guess in terms of what people do know, it would almost be off-pitch stuff. You know, it's well publicised about the club's policy, I guess, the ethos, all-vegan football club. And that comes from Dale Vince, who has been at the club now for 10 years as chairman and owner. You know, a trendsetter, I think it's fair to say. An organic pitch, bamboo shirts, plenty of stuff which I'm sure Brentford fans have heard of before. In terms of the two clubs, though, I think there's almost similarities there. I think Brentford's recruitment is so well publicised and so impressive, this money ball model, I guess. Recruiting players from leagues that I guess other clubs wouldn't recruit from, and then selling them on for big fees. You look at Benrahma and Watkins as two recent examples, and Forest Green are kind of like that on a lower scale. Like Ethan Pinnock is a fine example of that, bought from Dulwich Hamlet. Come on to him in a bit more detail in a bit, but bought from Dulwich Hamlet, sold to Barnsley, and yeah, that's sort of what Forest Green look to do: pick up gems from non-league or look to pick up players who have been thrown on the scrap heap at Premier League academies and develop them, improve them. So I think in terms of that, there are similarities between the two clubs, and Forest Green have sort of, yeah, been very good at doing that in the last few years. Promoted from the National League in 2017, and I guess the perception of the club has sort of changed since Dale Vince has come in. In the conference, they had a very, very big budget, were well-backed, had a very good squad, and they just couldn't quite achieve promotion. It was eventually achieved in 2017 under Mark Cooper, but before that, with David Hockaday and Aidy Pennock, they, it's fair to say, underachieved with good budgets. So, yeah, Forest Green probably weren't the most liked club in the sort of latter years of the National League. It's a bit like how sort of Salford are perceived now with the backing of the class of 92, I guess. But Forest Green, as I've mentioned, looking really good this season so far, and it's still very early days, but after going close on a few occasions in the last few years, we've had 2 playoff campaigns in our first 4 seasons in League 2. It looks like they're well placed to go again and maybe go one better, even though it's only been 4 games, of course. But this represents a new beginning for Forest Green. Mark Cooper, 5 years at the club, which is such a long time for any manager now. Don't see that sort of longevity anymore. But he did lose his job April of this year. But before that, you know, Forest Green have been one of the better teams in League 2 for the last few years. The first season they nearly went down, survived by a point in the end. Would have been disastrous to go back down to the National League after Forest Green had worked so hard to get there in the first place and signed so many players in that summer and January. But since then they have gone from strength to strength. A couple of playoff campaigns, as I mentioned. the season that was disrupted by COVID was a disappointing one, where Rovers, I think, finished 10th in the end via PPG. But in terms of this season, this is probably the best squad Forest Green have had under a head coach who I think everyone's really got behind and who everybody trusts. So it is looking very promising. One of the, I guess, main talking points surrounding this fixture is Ethan Pinnock. And I don't think any Forest Green fan realistically expects him to play. However nice that would be, he would get a really good reception from, I think it'll be about 500 odd travelling fans on Tuesday night. He would get a brilliant reception because it was obvious to us straight away. And we're not just saying that, or I'm not just saying that because he's gone and done what he's done. But I think when you watched him, probably just after sort of 5 to 10 games, you thought this guy is too good. It's sort of men against boys sort of stuff when he played for us in the National League. He was versatile. He played centre back, left back, holding midfield, in front of the back four. He could just do everything. So comfortable on the ball, dominant in the air, really good size. It felt like you could put him anywhere on the pitch and he'd do a job for you. And he missed about the last 10 games of the promotion winning season in 16-17, and he came back for the playoffs and played at left back in both semi-finals and the final, and he was absolutely exceptional, one of the best players on the pitch. And that sort of just speaks volumes of the man, I think. You know, he'd missed so much football, but he came back in and performed absolutely unbelievably. His move to Barnsley that summer was inevitable because he was clearly above the level. A great pickup from Forest Green to discover him from Dulwich Hamlet. And what he's gone on to achieve has been no surprise. You know, I've watched Brentford a fair few times, I think, over the last couple of years on Sky when they've been playing in the Championship. And every time you watch him, you think, how is this guy not playing in the Premier League yet? Unbelievable. So it's good that he's now getting that opportunity. I think it's almost a shame that he was sort of like a late developer. I think he joined Forest Green when he was 24, maybe. I think if that move had come around a few years earlier, then, you know, we could be talking about a Champions League defender, really. I think he's that good, and he's just got it. Left-footed as well. You know how highly valued left-footed centre-backs are nowadays. So Ethan Pinnock, he'll get a great reception if he does come on Tuesday, although I don't think any Forest Green fans are really sort of holding out hope that he will do so. And since then, lots of players have sort of followed in that sort of Pinnock footstep, I guess. Liam Kitching is another one. We sold him to Barnsley in January. He's another player I think will definitely go on to play in the Premier League. He's only 21, playing in the Championship, so he's definitely a player I think you'll cross paths with in the Premier League in the future. And we've got a few players like that at the moment, actually. Yudoka Godwin-Malif is one of them. Unfortunately, he's going to be injured for this game. He's got a broken collarbone, but an overlapping centre-back, right-sided, great energy, athleticism, really sort of wise and humble head. But as I said, unfortunately, he won't be playing, which is a shame, because I think Brentford fans would really enjoy watching him. In terms of our other key players, our strikers have been on great form this season, Jamil Matt and Matty Stevens. Although it's difficult to say what Forest Green are going to do here, I think they'll probably make four changes. That's what they did for the Bristol City game, and I'd imagine they'd do something similar here. Everyone's going to want to play this game. That's the difference. Everyone will want to play because, you know, a big stage, there'll be loads of people watching, you know, scouts from bigger clubs, etc. So everyone's going to want to play and prove themselves. In terms of my man to watch out for, if he plays, Nicky Cadden, scored a hat-trick against Crawley yesterday. He's a left wing-back, a hat-trick for a left wing-back. I'm not sure if anyone's ever done that before. Again, a player who's probably above League 2 level, a great left foot, looks to get to the byline, really good technique from set pieces and crossing. And yeah, he's one to watch out for. Nicky Cadden, a flying left wing-back who we bought from Granite Morton a couple of summers ago. But yeah, I think, as I've mentioned already, I think Brentford fans will leave the stadium on Tuesday night feeling impressed with what they've seen from Forest Green. Edwards has implemented a sort of 3-4-1-2 system. It's really flexible, expansive, fun. It's just a really fun team to watch. Plenty of rotations and movement going on. And they won't change as well. That's something Rob Edwards has made clear so far. They won't change for anybody. They'll look to attack every game. They want to win every game. Forest Green will have spells on Tuesday night where they'll dominate possession. Now, you know, f- for the level, they are a really good side to watch. I'm expecting an entertaining game on Tuesday. What team will your lot put out? Obviously, you know, I'm not expecting the big boys, your Tonys and Buemos, etc. I would, you know, I'm guessing sort of Force will start, maybe someone like Charlie Goode, who we came up against a couple of times when he played for Northampton in League Two. So it'd be interesting to see what sort of team you put out. Obviously, you scrapped your academy, didn't you, a few years back, and now got a B team. So, you know, I think a few of those boys will feature, but it'll be a great experience for those Forest Green players. Not expecting the big boys to come out and play, but it will still be players who have got great pedigree. Marcus Falls, of course, was at the Euros in the summer, I think. So that just tells you a lot. It's a shame Josh De Silva's injured at the minute, because whenever I've watched Brentford, he's been one of my favourite players to watch. I think he's an absolutely fantastic player. But score prediction on Tuesday, I don't think I'm saying this through bias. I think this is my head speaking over heart. I think Forest Green can do something on Tuesday night. They're fearless, a young squad. As I've said, they won't change for anybody. They're going to give it a really good go on Tuesday. And a lot of this depends on how much Brentford change, I guess. You know, if it is Pinnock, Tony, Raya Jansen, then things might look a bit different, but I don't think we're expecting that. So, yeah, if there are a few changes there, I think Forest Green can do something. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. And then, obviously, straight to penalties, which I think is a good thing. I don't think anyone enjoys extra time, really, do they? So, in terms of penalties, I think, yeah, I think that's probably where Brentford will prevail. I think, 2 years ago against Bournemouth, we failed to score a penalty. I think it can be quite a daunting thing when you're going up against a Premier League goalkeeper taking a penalty. So I think Brentford will win on pens, but I'm expecting a really brave effort from Forest Green on Tuesday night, 1-1. And I think Brentford fans, you'll leave feeling really impressed with what you've seen as well. So here's hoping for a good game anyway. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Billy. And yes, see you all Tuesday. Looking forward to a good game down at the Brentford Community Stadium. I can't wait to visit as well.
So that was Laurie Martin from the FGR podcast, talking all things Forest Green Rovers. So yeah, there you have it. Forest Green Rovers and Palace all in one. So listen, this has been the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Don't forget, check the post-match podcast for the Terrace. You know, besotted.com, we've got all sorts of articles. We'll have a match report from this as well. Don't forget kofibesotted.com/beer, and you can support us. You can buy us a beer if you want to. We thank you for all the people that supported us so far. Thanks for the people who have pledged support and sponsorship and stuff like that. We've been talking to a few people, so we appreciate that. If anybody else wants to, besotted1992@gmail.com, just message us or DM us or whatever you need to do as well. T-shirts, Premier League t-shirts, go and buy them from besotted.com and subscribe to us on all podcast channels. But great chatting to you. I've got the Allard in the house.
Good morning, I suppose, and I'll see you Tuesday night for a bit of Forest Green Rovers.
We got the Laney in the house.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, good morning. This is Billy Grant here. I had a great time with buddies, as we say. We've got another podcast, don't forget, on Wednesday, and we're going to talk on Thursday, and Thursday, as we say.
Come on, you bees.
Come on, you bees. You bees.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.